Matt Devlin has been the voice of all of this for many years and has been, of course, behind the microphone for television coverage of, well, the 82 regular season games and the numerous playoff games that we've seen, including all five so far of the final. Is your assessment of this series the same as ours? An intriguing, complex series of singular events where almost every night there's a game, there's a different story.
I would agree with that, and I'd also add in the element of Canada, that for the first time ever, the NBA Finals is being played outside of the United States, and that certainly adds a storyline, as we all know, and that you go back to game one, two, three, four, five, you know, they all become essentially, you know, a capsule where each one of them, as you described, has its own, you know, storyline. And that's typically, you know, what the NBA Finals will bring you when you have two teams that are as good as these two teams are. And so it's just one slight thing that'll happen, one possession, an 18-0 run in game two, a box in one, all these little elements that all of a sudden grow and they determine potentially the outcome of the game.
All right, let's go to some specifics here. Over the course of this year, I probably could count on one hand the number of times we've questioned decisions made by Nick Nurse as the head coach. I don't doubt that if we look back on all the games that have been played, nearly 100 or more, we would find a few situations. But we had two in last night's game, both of them in the last 3 minutes, both of them involving timeouts or lack of timeouts. With about 3 minutes left and the Raptors with clear momentum and I believe a six-point lead at the time,
yep.
Nick Nurse decides to call 103-97, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, and Nick decides to call a timeout. Historically, you can make the argument that you don't call a timeout when your team is hot and their team is not. And so there is item number one, should he have, and how did that impact the game? And then you get to the last, 15 seconds or so when the Raptors, Golden State misses the shot, Raptors get the ball and set up for the final shot. He had a timeout in his pocket. He didn't use it. He didn't set up a play. And what winds up happening, as we all know, is a corner three by Lowry when a three was not necessary. If they were down two, and I said this before, I'll say it one more time, I had to relook at the scoreboard. I thought I'd misread it. I thought they must be down by two if they're taking a three. But the truth of the matter is they were only down by one. They only needed a two. Should he have called a timeout at the beginning of that play? Your thoughts on both of those decisions?
Well, number one, when you go back to the stretch that the Raptors put together prior to the timeout, it was a furious and hectic pace. The building was charged. There was no doubt about that. Kawhi Leonard exerted an immense amount of energy. He went on a 10-0 run by himself. The Raptors were right there. I understand both sides of this story. I understand Nick Nurse knowing his team better than any one of us, saying, you know, I think Kyle Lowry, I think Kawhi Leonard, they need a rest here before we make a final push. Let's set it upside out. Let's run a play here. And let's see if we can execute this play, and now we're ready for the stretch drive. I understand the other aspect of it, but I will, in those sort of situations, side with they know a coach. It could be Nick Nurse. It could be a hockey coach. It could be Bruce Cassidy, right, with the Boston Bruins. They know their teams better than we do.
All right, now, I'll give you that. Hang on. I'll give you that. if Kerr calls the timeout, that's more logical to me. Because you, as a general rule, when your team is not going well, when things seem to have broken down, call a timeout, try and get your act together, try and go on a run yourself. If the timeout had been called by Golden State, I understand it. It becomes a lot more questionable when Nick calls it.
Look, you know, Nick mentioned last night why he called it. He felt that his team needed arrest. And so when you have a coach that has been with this team now 60 days into the postseason, has been with the team dating back to Vancouver training camp, and how many days are we up to that now? Nearly, you know, 280 some odd days, 275 days. If he comes out and says, I feel as though my team needed that rest, that time, we can certainly have the conversation. But at the end of the day, he took that time out. And that was, you know, his decision. You can agree or disagree. However, he took that time out, right?
Well, I know what he did. I just don't agree with it. And it's not that I'm using the premise. It's rare that I criticize Coach Nurse. It's rare we've had the opportunity to even have a conversation that questions a decision that he made. But all right, let's put that one aside. Let's go to the last 15 seconds or whatever it was with when the Raptors get the ball back, one point down, got a chance to set up a shot, and he doesn't call the timeout.
Right. So here comes the two different, you know, mindsets, right, of two different thought processes. One is you allow them to continue to roll with the first timeout. The second one, you make the decision to roll, right? Let's go ahead and let's play this through. They don't have that opportunity to set up defensively, right? And did one timeout affect the choice of calling a timeout or not calling a timeout late in that situation? I don't know. But, you know, there are times, as we know, with Nick that he will say, okay, we're going to allow this to transpire. We're going to allow it to flow. I rewatched, and I didn't have much time, right? Because, you know, by the time I got home, Pat was up early this morning, and I'm already here in San Francisco. But I did rewatch that last sequence. You know, the immediate double on Kawhi, right? You have two strong defenders on him with the presence of Andre Iguodala. He then kicks it to Fred. Fred has Livingston, a tremendous amount of length on him. Fred now puts it on the bounce. You have Gasol right there with Draymond Green, who's playing on the top side and did not necessarily play the drive of Van Vliet. And Draymond, to his credit, who is, as we all know, a world-class defender, when that pass was made to the corner, it was a good, clean look. You can have a conversation of, well, why didn't you get to the rim? Why didn't, you know, you put a one bounce on the floor, hit short corner? All this is transpiring, as we know, seconds, pressure, 20,000 on their feet, down by one, 6 million people watching in Canada. You look at that play. Kyle had a great look, and Draymond Green got a finger on that ball.
Do you think there's any chance?
If it goes down.
Well, we're not having this conversation.
We're not having this conversation.
No, I get it. I get that. That's all part of the equation here. But the fact is, it didn't go down. He didn't.
Correct.
The Raptors didn't need a three, and what they needed was a play that gave them the highest percentage chance of a 2-point basket, or in the worst case scenario, a putback. And you had the opportunity to sit down, think about it, and call a play. And what wound up happening was exactly what you don't want to happen. A shot from the corner, however good it might have appeared, it was unnecessary to have a 3-point shot from the corner. And it happened in the flow of the game. Golden State played great defense on that play. Virtually perfect defense on that play.
Yeah.
But you can't tell me that Nick Nurse would have got the chalkboard out and drawn up that scenario. Would not have happened.
Well, as we know from this finals run by the Toronto Raptors, and even in the regular season, there have been situations where he has called timeout side out of bounds play, and they have worked. Right. Mm-hmm. He's also had situations during the regular season where it's like, okay, end the clock scenarios, let's go ahead and run that out. In that moment, clearly, he felt as though he would rather take his chances with a scrambling defense than one set.
You know, Matt, it's interesting in listening to you and Bob, and, you know, you could have – This could be NBA radio, basically. We do 5 hours, basically, on the those two possessions that you talked about. What's interesting to me is I actually think the game was lost on different possessions. I think it was lost between the six-point lead and the final shot, where they really could have buried them with some better looks, and particularly the play that really blew up, which ended up with Kyle throwing that sort of weird pass to Gasol that became a backcourt violation. You know, if you get a better look or some or something that even gets you to the line, the game's probably over. You know, if you go up eight, they're probably buried. The thing I wanted to ask you, though, is you had to call something that was a pretty extraordinary thing in real time, and that was Kevin Durant's injury. Can you give us sort of your reflection from your viewpoint now, 24 hours later, what you saw, how you reacted to at least some in the crowd cheering that? That was a pretty surreal call that you had to make there.
Yeah. Well, number one, I haven't had time to go back and re-listen to the call. As you know, Richard, I would say the majority of the nights when I come home or in the morning, I rewatch, you know, the games to see how, you know, I handled certain situations. But I can tell you from sitting courtside and then also having a microphone on that initially I thought that the roar from the crowd, the cheering, was on the turnover, right? Serge Ibaka gets the ball. There's a turnover. Then the next thing that you see, obviously, is Kevin Durant going down, and then ultimately Kyle Lowry and Serge Ibaka telling the crowd, you know, to, you know, not cheer the devastating injury to a brilliant basketball player in Kevin Durant. And then ultimately, you know, the KD chants and then Kevin being, you know, brought off of the court. Unbelievable emotional range there within even the building. I think the initial, you know, burst of cheers for the steal. And then I think some people, I don't know, because I, you know, I'm not a fan sitting in the stands, you know, some people reacting to Kevin going down and how that kind of then carried on the cheering. And then ultimately the players, you know, telling everybody to, you know, please stop by gesturing their arms. And then ultimately the KD taking over. It was, in a way, surreal that you're sitting there and you're seeing just that wide range. And as we know, anyone that attends any sort of athletic event, it doesn't matter if you're watching kids play or professionals play, you just don't do that, right? You don't cheer another athlete going down. You know, that's just not what you do. And so, you know, fortunately the crowd responded with the KD chants. And, you know, that obviously was a scene of him, you know, then walking, you know, off the court.
But you would accept that this is a topic of discussion, especially in sports talk radio in the United States. And you know, we've discussed it off and on over the last 3 hours. It is, at least to some extent, a moment of embarrassment if you are a Toronto sports fan.
Not a good look. Yeah, it's not a good look. I mean, we know that. I think, look, it's what everybody is talking about, tweeting about in the U.S., right?
Of course.
And I think that, you know, when you look back on it in that one instant, that 1 second, I think it immediately turned. Now, after the game, I asked a couple of people that were attending, like, what was the feel in the stands, right? Because I'm courtside with a headset on, and as both of you know, when you have a headset on, yes, you hear this ambient noise, you can hear certain things, but then there are other things that you're blocked off to,
right?
And from, and so I asked, you know, what was kind of, and there was, I think, that sense of, okay, a turnover, a steal, wait a minute, KD, and then, you know, there was people, you know, cheering, and then everybody was kind of like, whoa, 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 wait a minute, that's more severe than what everybody, now, how could you think him going down wouldn't be severe if you followed this storyline at all? And ultimately, I think the storyline turns, because this is the other big topic of conversation, to Golden State and the pressure that he was put under to play. And everyone that I was speaking with behind the scenes was saying that, you know, man, it'd be tough for him to come back and play.
Well,
his injury, and worst case scenario, it appears as though it happened. And it's a loss in the NBA when a player like that, and I know it doesn't matter that he plays for the Golden State Warriors. He is a brilliant basketball player. And I would say to anybody that, you know, whether you're attending your kid's soccer game, basketball game, hockey, whatever sport they may play, all the way through, right? You would never sit on the sideline and cheer in those situations for somebody that goes down. And without him in the league next year, potentially, right, it'll be a loss. It'll be a loss.
Well, with respect to your comment about the headsets and what you can and cannot hear, I can assure you that my colleague, Mr. Deitch, has repeatedly put the headset on and is hopeful that somehow it will prevent him from hearing the things that I say. Unfortunately, it only enhances them.
Yeah, it's
and so it doesn't work the way you would hope sometimes.
Matt, were you on the team charter to Oakland?
Yes, I was.
Okay, without obviously giving up anything proprietary or something that would break a confidence, can you give listeners a sense of what team officials are saying about Game 6, how you feel the players have come out, you know, hours after a pretty tough loss, and knowing that there's still a pretty significant job at hand?
Very confident group. I think both of you have followed this team, and I think that this could be said at any time throughout the course of this postseason run, whether it's after game one against Orlando or, you know, the Milwaukee series down 2-0 or splitting the first two games of this series at home. They are a resilient and composed group, and they feel as though they can come to Oracle on Thursday and take care of business in 6, as you would expect, as you would expect. When you analyze these both of these teams, you know, the Toronto Raptors, you know, to me are a team that have shown to be the better team. I mean, they, from a defensive standpoint, they have been outstanding defensively. You have to avoid offensive droughts. We've talked about that before. We've seen it, prolonged offensive droughts, which you will see. But they're a confident group, Richard. And that's not a confident in how they're confident. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, as we've seen, you know, their response last night or today was very similar to their responses of winning games and or losing. Their tenor, their tone is the same.
I don't disagree with anything you said. I believe the Raptors are the better team, and I think they will prevail, and I think they would have prevailed last night, but for a series of miscues. Not the least of which, Green had a bad night. Siakam had a bad night. Such a bad night that he barely played in the fourth quarter.
Kawhi had a tough three quarters.
And, I was going to get to that. That may have been the worst game I've seen Kawhi play. Now I take into account that he scored 10 straight points and a bunch of them in the fourth quarter and got them back into the game. And you have to respect that. But up until that point, not only had he been relatively ineffective offensively, how many times did he turn the ball over? How many times did he fumble the ball but manage to get it back? He was just seemed out of sorts last night. Your thoughts?
Well, look, he's been the best player in the 2019 postseason, as we all know.
I give you
that. I think that, honestly, I think that there was an immense amount of contact throughout the first half of that game, where there were no calls. And if you want to say, hey, Matt, you know, you're looking through it through Kawhi eyes, well, go ahead and say it. I'm just telling you, I'm sitting there going, how is he handling this? He is so strong to be able to do what he does through the contact that he gets is truly remarkable, because every time he has the ball, it's not just one, it's a group around him, and there's an immense amount of contact. I'm going to now further that to this, that the Raptors, from an offensive standpoint, as we saw last night, there was a little bit of, hey, I'm going to get it going here, instead of moving the ball, right? Pascal, there was a lot of that, where Pascal would get it and like, okay, hey, I'm going to try to get it going off the bounce instead of, you know, moving it around. And I think that, you know, as we saw, as the game developed, you know, Kawhi gets a ton of attention, you know, at the last play, right? He kicks it, Van Vliet, he kicks it, finds Kyle in the corner, the open three. I thought that, you know, Nick was going with a group that was moving it a little bit better. And then, you know, this team, and I don't know if both of you would agree with this or not, but I think this team has gotten better right through the first, second, third, and now into the NBA Finals. But you're still going to hit stretches of, you know, from, you know, where you're going to have to battle through some droughts. How do you get by that? Either one, you have Kawhi doing what he did, which was, hey, I'm going to try to take this thing over. Or the other point is, okay, now if two are on me, we know that, you know, somebody is open and we got to, you know, move the ball. We being the Toronto Raptors have to move the ball in that mindset. And I think that that certainly is something that the Raptors, you know, when you go back and watch the tape last night, more than likely you're going to see where there's going to be some situations where you could have moved the ball. But again, I thought, you know, they played good D. I know, you know, look, you know, Curry and Thompson or something else, they made 20 threes, 20 of them. I mean, it's the first time in NBA Finals history. The Raptors had just tied the record at Oracle, making 17. And last night, it took them to make 20 threes to beat the Raptors by one.
Yeah. You know, Matt, it's a bit of a simplistic way to look at it, but you can take Durant's points off the board, and it's a different game. And this is where you sort of, I think, if you're a Raptors fan, feel good about Game 6. You could take 11 minutes of Kawhi Leonard guarding Kevin Durant that no longer exists for Game 6. He's on someone else. He limits that other player in Game 6. And you're talking about such small margins of victory or loss. Those minutes can be the difference between an NBA championship in Game 6 and a different situation if Kevin Durant's healthy.
Well, simply put, and I've said this repeatedly, guys, in my mind, this has never been about how Golden State plays. Not in game 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5.
Yeah.
It is entirely about how the Raptors play. All they have to do is shoot the ball reasonably well, and they win. And they win comfortably.
You said that, but the one caveat is that you can say all that because Kevin Durant has not been around for those games.
Well, I give you that, but I can't. No one can quantify what the difference would be.
Well, you saw the difference in the first 11 minutes.
Well, we but the Raptors had bad starts before. Go ahead.
And I'll add this to that narrative, and how soon we forget. 2015, okay, in the second round, Golden State took on a Memphis Grizzlies team that was out without Mike Conley and Tony Allen.
Yeah.
Then in the finals, they took on a Cleveland team with no Kevin Love and Kyrie. Is anybody having that conversation today?
No. No, there's no asterisk.
In 2017, they took on a Spurs team in the Western Conference Finals with no Kawhi and no Tony Parker. I don't hear anybody having that conversation.
I'm with you, Matt. Matt, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was going to say the asterisk debate that some in the states are doing is nonsense. Does the Olajuwon Rockets, does that championship not count because Michael Jordan played baseball? It's ridiculous.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, look, I think to your point, Bob, I would say this, and I've said it throughout this series. I think the Raptors, from a defensive standpoint, have proven to be the best defensive team in the NBA, bar none.
I agree.
Right? I think that's I don't even think that's a conversation that you can sit around and say, well, geez, I don't. No, they look at what they've done against, you know, what they were able to do against Philadelphia, what they were able to do against Milwaukee, and what they've been able to do against Golden State with or without Kevin Durant. The biggest thing, and we know this from game two on the 18-0 run, is, and as I mentioned before, from an offensive standpoint, you cannot have prolonged droughts, right? And that's key. Now, real quick, just back to last night, one of the other players that did not start was the fourth, because they started the game small, right? Steve Kerr did. The fourth big, essentially, to come off of the bench was DeMarcus Cousins. And he made an impact late in that game. He made an impact. You know, from a defensive standpoint, rim protecting, what he was able to do offensively. And so, you know, they went to Bogut, then they went to Looney. Obviously, they started small with Draymond, KD, and you know the rest. And then eventually, you know, Kerr got to Cousins, and Cousins ended up being a factor. I would think that they're going to go back to him. I think they'll go back to him in the starting lineup come game six.
Yeah, we got to get out of here. But I heard the dialogue about the Golden State going small. I find that intriguing when you replace somebody with Kevin Durant. I have a hard time of looking at that and saying, oh, they're playing small. They got a guy who's only 6'11 on the floor instead of somebody else.
Well, I know.
Yeah.
But from a theoretical standpoint, right, it's not going to be somebody that's going to be a traditional five. Not that there's any traditional fives left, right?
I hear you.
Everybody likes to play five out. So, all right.
Enjoy your time in San Francisco, and hopefully your trip across the bridge will be the last one you make. Maybe ever, certainly to that arena it will be. And hopefully there's a championship at the end of game number six. Thanks, Maddie.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you. Appreciate it.